Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. Josh and Chuck here. Say hi, Chuck.
Hi, Chuck.
Chuck, have you been paying attention to that story that came out of Canada this past July, that grizzly murder on the Greyhound bus?
Yeah, that was... You couldn't write something that ghastly.
No, you really can't. So I guess we should probably fill in anybody who's not aware of it. There was this guy named Vince Lee who allegedly, out of nowhere, leans over in this bus in the dark of night that's just traveling down the plains of Manitoba, I think.
Right.
And he just leans over and starts stabbing this guy sitting next to him who he's never met before. And apparently witnesses say that they hadn't even spoken.
No, completely unprovoked.
Yeah, and just stabs him and stabs him and stabs him, and everybody just starts fleeing the bus.
Yeah.
And they end up locking this guy on there, and he starts walking around back and forth, like kind of, I get the impression, kind of like a caged animal.
Right.
And then I guess he gets the idea to go back and cut the victim's head off, who's now dead.
Right.
But he cuts his head off, and he's walking around with the bus.
Showing people
with that.
Outside,
yes,
if
exactly.
I'm not mistaken.
And apparently he dropped this poor guy's head in front of the witnesses, like at the steps at the front door of the bus.
Right.
These people were holding the doors closed to trap him on. And there's this one other, this is bad enough, right?
Right.
But there's this, he did something else that just, I think it makes everything kind of even worse. He walked back and started cutting off pieces of the guy and eating them.
Right. And maybe we should have had a little warning before this podcast.
This, well, yeah, maybe so. Hopefully from the title, people will be
right.
A little prepared.
Sure.
So basically, I started researching this. I'd heard about it, this incredibly ghastly murder. And I, at the time I was writing or researching an article, How Cannibalism Works.
Right.
So I'm thinking, you know, as grim as it is, like, this is pretty good story to use as a lead, as an introduction for the article, right?
Right.
And the more I started researching it, the more I realized I had this perfect line. It was like, you know, when Mr. Lee, I should say allegedly, he's been charged, but he hasn't been convicted, you know, ate those bits of flesh, he went from a mere murderer to, you know, something like a monster, like
right.
a cannibal, right? But the more I looked into this story, like, honestly, the cannibalism almost falls in line with everything else he was doing.
Right.
It was such an unspeakable act, it didn't stand out. The cannibalism was also almost muted by the rest of this stuff.
Sure.
So instead, I went with Armin Mivas.
Right, which was another really bizarre and ghastly story out of Germany.
It really was. It's not nearly as, I don't find it nearly as disconcerting as the Greyhound bus story.
Yeah, that one's a little more frightening. This
it
one
definitely
is definitely creepy though.
I mean, this was a consenting adult, right?
Right.
So, you want to tell them about Mr. Mivas?
Well, yeah, this is a guy. I believe he put an ad on in the newspapers or on a
that
website.
That was on Personal's website.
Yeah, looking for someone who would allow themselves to be eaten by this guy.
Yep.
And that's remarkable enough, but he had a taker.
Well, he got close a few times apparently. But yeah, it's this one guy named Bernt Jürgen Brandes.
Right.
43. Wasn't exactly what Mivas was looking for. Mivas was advertising an 18 to 30-year-old well-built guy and
right.
Apparently,
he got a little less picky as time went on.
Exactly, yeah. So Brandes comes over, and they basically get him drunk.
Right.
He's taking some painkillers, and Mr. Mivas cuts off his penis and proceeds to cook it.
For the both of them.
For the both of them. And I didn't put in the article, but what I gathered was that they both ate some and didn't really like it.
Right.
So by this time, Brandes, who's like totally consenting, fully aware of what's going on, what's going to happen, that he's going to die tonight. This
right.
is what he came over for.
Right.
He goes to take a bath because he's just bleeding everywhere. His penis is cut off.
Right.
Right. And he goes to take a bath and he loses consciousness in the bath. So Mivas is like, all right, it's you're done, and cuts the guy's throat, and
right.
actually had set up like a basically a butcher room
mm-hmm.
where he butchered the guy, and I guess, made steaks out of him, flanks.
Over
that
a
kind
period
of thing.
Time, he ate his body, right?
44 pounds portion. Of this guy's body over a few months. The thing is, he had totally gotten away with it.
Right.
Like the police had no idea this had happened. There was no like missing persons report, as far as I know, or anything like that. And the way he was caught was some fellow chat room dwellers knew what Mivis was doing and apparently got wind that it had been successful or whatever and alerted police, and they found out, and he's like, well, yeah, totally, it was great.
Right.
So
I think what's most remarkable about this story is not only that this guy did this, but there was no law against cannibalism at the time in Germany.
No.
So he was being tried for murder.
First they had him on, I think they had him on manslaughter.
Right.
And because
the other guy consented.
He consented. And there was such outrage in Germany against it that they're retrying him somehow.
Right.
For murder. But yeah, there is no law in the books. I think there is now.
Right.
And the same goes for the UK. I really, really tried. I could not find any federal statute outlawing cannibalism in the U.S., but I did find vague references that it is illegal, but I couldn't find any actual law. But the thing is, it's almost like you don't really have to outlaw cannibalism because it's a taboo.
Completely.
It's like it's beyond the law. It exists beyond the law. It's something way worse than anything that we need to sanction legally.
You would think.
You would think.
Right.
Right? So what Mivis and Lee, allegedly, and Albert Fish, who was a murdering pederast cannibal of the 1920s, and, of course, one of the most famous of all, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right.
What they were doing is called pathological cannibalism, which basically that's psychology. That has very little to do with anthropology. The rest of cannibalism falls very much into the realm of anthropology, and it's been studied and studied. It's actually one of the more interesting fields of study or subfields of study, I think, in any aspect of anthropology. What do you think?
Well, I mean, as far as cannibalism is religious custom.
Sure.
And offering up to the gods, that kind of thing with the Aztecs.
That's part of it, yeah. There's a bunch of different types.
Yeah, there's different subsets and different kinds.
Right.
It's probably disturbing.
Do you know what they are? Quick quiz.
Well, I don't. I know you do. You school me.
Okay, so you got survival cannibalism.
Right.
Learned cannibalism, which is subdivided into endocannibalism, which is eating like members of your family or your tribe or whatever.
Yeah.
And exocannibalism, which is the opposite. It's eating members of outside your tribe or family.
And that's mainly for a religious ceremony.
Not necessarily.
Probably. No.
We'll get to that in a second. There's also pathological, right? And then there's another one that I find arguably the most disturbing, auto-cannibalism.
That's eating oneself, correct?
Yes. Now, I didn't find any examples of an actual documented case of a person voluntarily eating themselves, aside from Jürgen Brandes, who apparently ate some of his penis,
right?
But didn't really like it.
Right.
So but usually auto-cannibalism, it's forced.
Yeah, but what about, like, I know I bite my nails, and a lot of people think that is auto-cannibalism.
It is technically. Do you eat your fingernail clippings, or do you just bite your nails?
Cause that's no, I, when I was younger, difference. Yeah, when I was younger, I would swallow my fingernail clippings, oof. And it would have, like, stomach problems and stuff.
I would imagine so, Chuck. So you're not supposed to swallow that.
Well, I was a little kid. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. It was a nervous
habit.
You're
like a poor kid.
Right.
Kind of, except a little more fortunate, I take it.
So I don't do that anymore. I don't swallow.
That's good. But yeah, you people do consider technically that biting your fingernails is a form of auto-cannibalism. More often, it's forced. Auto-cannibalism is forced. I think in like 2003 or 2004, in the Congo, some Congolese rebels were accused of killing pygmies and forcing other pygmies, or no, I'm sorry, forcing pygmies to eat parts of themselves before killing them, and also, you know, practicing cannibalism by eating the pygmies themselves. Just some pretty terrible stuff going on down in Congo.
Yeah, and I know in the early 1930s in the United States, even they had a lot of racist-fueled acts of auto-cannibalism.
You know, I don't think enough people know about this. I hadn't heard about this guy until I wrote this article, Claude Neal. Had you heard of them before?
No, I hadn't.
Okay.
Because, you know, they don't teach the stuff in history classes.
No, and they really should. So they I think should. It's kind of up to us to teach it, right?
Right.
So in 1934 in Florida, about 2,000 white Southerners gathered and basically sacrificed this black guy named Claude Neal.
Right.
And
they advertised it.
They advertised in the paper. They sent out invitations.
I know. It's sick.
Right? And so all these people show up, and it's like this just kind of orgiastic sacrifice or ritual where they basically they tortured him. They cut off his penis and made him eat it. It was forced auto-cannibalism.
Right, and his testicles as well, right?
Right. And one thing that didn't make in the article is that they forced him to say that he liked how it tasted. And then finally, after a couple of hours, I take it, they finally lynched him. They hung him. And the sad thing is this doesn't go down as like a sacrifice or an auto-cannibalistic
right.
act. It's called a lynching.
Exactly.
Which lynching's bad enough, but this seems so much further beyond.
Well, it is. And it's kind of a way of even whitewashing. I mean, lynching is bad enough. You're right.
Sure.
But when you don't hear about those details,
no.
You think this guy was taken out and hung, which is already horrible. But
yeah.
This goes so far beyond that. It's just...
It definitely is, and like you said, they don't teach that in the history books, and I think they should. So, but those are the types of cannibalism, right? What about you? Know much about survival cannibalism, like alive and all that?
Yeah, well, the Donner Party was one of the earlier ones. That was the group of settlers that were heading out west, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a splinter group went off in the Sierra Nevada mountains and kind of encountered some badness, weather and the like, and they resorted to cannibalism, and then. The film and book Alive about the soccer team that crashed in the Andes, I think.
Yeah, Uruguayan team.
Yeah, and they ended up resorting to cannibalism from some of their comrades who had already died.
Mm-hmm. They survived like 71 days like that.
I know, and you know, that's one of the more forgivable, probably the most forgivable
Definitely.
Form of cannibalism.
Definitely, because it's survival. It's a, you're surviving.
Right, and none of these guys wanted to do what they had to do, but they, you know, they needed to.
Agreed, and this was 1972 or something like that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was the early 70s. So this is really, really recent. The thing is this has been going, this has happened many, many times. The Donner Party, there was actually something in the 19th century called the Custom of the Sea. Right?
Right.
Which is where, you know, where you're not happy with your lot in life, that phrase?
Mm-hmm.
That actually comes from the custom of the sea where you're drawing lots, drawing straws,
right?
Right? So you have the straws cut up to different lengths, and everybody draws them. And as per the custom of the sea, the person who drew the shortest straw, and this is like if you were stranded, if you were shipwrecked, and you were forced to resort to survival cannibalism, whoever drew the shortest straw... was that person was tapped to die, and whoever drew the next shortest straw was the person who had to kill them, and then everybody ate the person that was killed. It was like basically a codified survival cannibalism because it happened. It was just a fact of life when you were
a
sailor.
Yeah, I guess it's, I mean...
Because there were no search and rescue parties or anything
no.
like that. I mean, like, you may just... If you were rescued, somebody stumbled upon you, you know?
Right.
So it did happen a lot. And like you said, it is the most forgivable form, at least in the eyes of Westerners. It's survival cannibalism.
So.
You did what you had to do to stay alive. But at the same time, it's kind of chilling in that how easy it seems like it would be under those circumstances to eat another person, you know?
Right.
Which kind of points out that at any given point in time, we're like one plane crash or shipwreck away from, you know, eating one another. Yeah.
Right.
It's a little kind of spooky to realize that it's there. It's innate in all of us.
Right. Nobody would think that they would want to do something like that. But when push comes to shove and you're facing death, and there's a difference also. I mean, I guess your lot in life, that story, you were actually killing somebody to eat them. But in the case of the alive ones, they ate
the dead.
Yeah, their fallen comrades.
Right, right. So that's
a bit of a difference.
Yeah, yeah. That's survival cannibalism. And then you've got learned cannibalism, right?
Right.
And this is the stuff that's like really heavily studied. There's basically, they call it learned cannibalism or customary cannibalism. Because it's socially indoctrinated, right?
Right.
With endocannibalism, generally it's part of like a funeral rite.
Mm-hmm.
The Foray people in Papua New Guinea and the Wari in the Amazon were very well studied for their practices of cannibalism. Like the Wari, for example, what they were doing, this anthropologist named Beth Conklin found out that they were, by eating their recently deceased, they were transforming them. The Wari were really big on, or are really big on, changing their surroundings so that they're not reminded. No, actually, it's for the survivors.
Okay.
They're supposed to change everything that reminds them of the dead person so they're not sad or depressed. It's their way of getting over grief.
That's one way to do it.
And eating the dead body is it's a method of transforming it. So that's a pretty peaceful method of cannibalism. That's endocannibalism. And the Foray do the same thing for slightly different reasons. They're actually looking to gain certain attributes, like say wisdom or strength or that kind of thing. And it's very specific to the body part, right? So like, and only certain people can eat certain parts of a deceased relative. It's really interesting how, you know, over the course of centuries or millennia, humans can really slap labels on all sorts of different stuff.
Yeah, but you know, this kind of deserves to be broken down because they're also different, you know, all the different forms. So I don't think it's just willy-nilly the way they slap different names on these.
No, but that raises the question, why? Like, why do people, you know, why do cultures around the world have codified, socially sanctioned cannibalism? And I think really in the article I divided that between two approaches in anthropology. It's materialism and idealism.
Right.
So did you get this far in the article?
And actually I fell asleep about at that point.
I'm just kidding. It was a great article. Quarters of our readers or listeners are asleep as well. It's my voice. It has a very lulling.
Right.
So basically the materialists say that cannibalism generated from necessity, like there was a drought, that kind of thing. And some people who adhere to that are saying, you know, hey, it happens. The cannibalism would just be logical when, you know, you don't have a grocery store.
Right.
We didn't know how to tame crops and we're just hunter-gatherers and all of a sudden there's a drought.
So well, you do what you gotta do.
It's survival cannibalism. And then the idealists say, no. We interpret the world through symbols and so the human brain represents wisdom, and then cannibalism came after we started interpreting things as symbols.
Right.
And nobody's figured out who's right, but I tend to lean more toward the materialists.
You think so?
Yeah, I think cannibalism.
That makes more sense to me.
It's like we were saying. I think it's innate in all of us, and when the chips are down, I would eat you.
Well, it's good to know.
You know, Candace Gibson already told me that she would eat me. She called me meaty.
Well, I think I'd provide a hearty meal as well.
You would. I think we're about on par. Good. Yeah, yeah. I think at the very least, Armin Mivas could live on us for a very long time.
Well, I'm hungry.
I'm a little hungry too, Chuck. Do you want to go get something to eat?
That's a great idea.
Maybe a nice rare burger?
I might go with a salad.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.